Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Over the last few years, I've read multiple pieces, I've seen many videos about people developing relationships with crows, the birds. The people would leave them food, establish a pattern that the crows could count on, and then the crows, they start making a regular appearance, and then out of, you know, showing gratitude or securing the transaction for the future, the birds, they start to bring these little rewards, little trinkets, shiny rocks, interesting litter, sometimes literal coins. So I got super interested in this and I started trying it. And so I'd leave out different foods, dog food or whatever. And they started coming. And they started coming before I got the food out after a while. They would call really loud in the tree over my deck dozens and dozens of times. I set out food and they ate it. But they never brought me anything. Like they didn't watch the same videos I did or something, because they didn't know what their end of the bargain was, apparently. And one day I'm putting my food, this food on the railing out there, and something occurred to me. This is how prayer often feels for me. Other people outlining in their written works or online describing an experience where they lay out what they're supposed to. And despite not knowing exactly how it's going to go, what it's going to look like, there eventually is this response, and then oohs and ahs follow. And so then I try it, or you know, you and I try it, adding our little variations on it, changing up the place and the frequency and the amount, but always being sincere and trying. And then when it seems to really matter, not getting anything back. And I'm not talking about crows bringing litter. I'm talking about answers to prayer. And maybe you can relate. I mean, maybe the crow story threw you and you're a little distracted by it, but maybe you can relate to the prayer part. I'm betting that you can. It's a safe bet because if you Google prayer, you'll probably get more how to pray or why praying is important. You'll get more of those than you'll get just recorded prayers to pray along with or something. Countless articles and books and videos, probably 10 have come out while I've been talking. How to pray, why to pray. We as a staff at the church get asked several times a year, will you teach about it? And we have in the past. But I wonder if any of us have considered the interesting implication behind all this how to and why. Why all the tips and strategies and reminders of the importance of praying? Why are so many people saying, here are three easy steps, here are the five practices, here's the history of prayer, or whatever. It must be because people, they continue to look for help to do it. And why are they looking for help? Because people are praying. And very many of them are, in their own ways, concluding, or have concluded, it doesn't work. Not like they said. It's not really doing anything. So these dear people are being told, well, no, you got to try it this way. Don't stop. It's important. It works. And if it doesn't work, keep doing it anyway, because it's important. I mean, are you a Christian or not? Are you a spiritual person or not? So we keep talking about and learning about prayer, because prayer, it's not working like it seems like it's supposed to for something that we're doing so sincerely and have been told is so important and central to what it means to be a person of faith in Jesus. So today, I want to talk a little bit about prayer, and I'm mindful that I am just not going to do this sacred discipline justice. But maybe it'll be just enough to encourage you with what encourages me. And I need encouragement on this topic a lot. Because frankly, bluntly, prayer, praying, discussions of prayer, reminders to pray, signs in people's yards to pray. Apparently Jesus drives by a lot. Thank you to Jesus or telling us don't forget to pray. Thoughts and prayers, testimonies about the power of prayer, all of that stuff very often, not always, but very often, it irks the snot out of me. And sometimes I'll be with others in a service in some other church and somebody will start praying and it makes the air feel like it's, the air in the room is ionizing. The lighting and the gravity are changing while they're praying. Something mystical, mysterious happening. Other times, somebody prays and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you talking like that? You weren't talking like that 5 minutes ago. That's not your voice. And why are you asking the creator of the universe to take requests from you or from me? Like, when has God ever said, oh, good idea. I'm going to start caring about that now. And so maybe you just need to admit that here and now. Maybe prayer is the thing you privately have the least interest in because it's been a big source of disappointment or confusion or grief. And you can admit that if that's your experience. I mean, what in the world would we gain by hiding that if that's true? Piety? If you were told a product was crucial to your well-being, but it wouldn't turn on, you might leave it in your house on a shelf somewhere, but you would conclude sooner or later, this is a faulty product. You might still pray, but you don't really want to think too much about what you're doing when you do it because it just isn't doing what all the books said it would do if you just did it right. You might remember Steve Jobs. He was facing criticism on the iPhone early on. This might have been the first or second one. Users were saying that the signal wasn't very good. When you held it, apparently the antenna was somewhere in the phone where your hand would muffle its signal. And just however you naturally would hold it was bad for it. The antenna was in a bad spot. And his response to the criticism was that there's no problem with the antenna. He said, just avoid holding it in that way. You're doing it wrong. There's no problem with prayer. Your heart's just not in the right place. You're doing it with the wrong motivations. You aren't using the right words. You're too focused on getting what you want or getting it in your timing. Just avoid doing it that way. And so we get a little frustrated or confused or ashamed. I still do. I saw this online a while back. It was on a particular weekend.
This woman was looking out into the ocean when she asked God to show a huge whale jump out of the water. And this is what happened.
Lord, let me see a whale. Let me see a humongous, massive whale. Just jump right in front of me. I just want to see a big old...
No! Seconds after, a huge whale jumps out of the ocean, while God was probably smiling, watching her reaction.
That is undeniably beautiful. I can't imagine being that woman. Like, that's going to stay with her for the rest of her life. I'm sure that changed her. And yet, that same weekend, I saw this video. A friend of mine buried her child. And so which woman prayed more earnestly? Which prayer carried more weight? Which one would you have said yes to or no to? Both? Neither? I mean, I know, and you know, that's not how it works, but I just want to say that out loud because in this particular setting, this is the setting we rarely get to admit, it doesn't work like that unless I'm also going to say, but so do it like this. And then I talk about its power and all this stuff. And then you leave feeling like you have hope to try some new words or you feel even worse. And I used to do this. I used to tell people, just do it this way. It works. And I had to stop doing it many years ago because I realized I have something like a curse of knowledge in being a pastor for a couple decades. You don't have to be a pastor or even a chaplain to have a curse of knowledge. There are many people who have way more pain and suffering and disappointment intensive vocations that might not even agree with me about this. But this is how it's gone for me. This curse of knowledge that I feel like I finally had to admit I had. I've seen people pray in so many different circumstances. And then after that prayer, sometimes things shift and leave everybody gasping. I can't believe what came of that. But so often, far too often, it seems like I've just seen prayers, earnestly prayed, tearful prayers, bounce right off an ICU ceiling tile. The outcome of the circumstances being so contrary to what was prayed by the friends and the family, the parents, whatever it was so opposite, it almost felt like a taunt. And I have seen people so devoted to prayer who just constantly have terrible luck. And I've seen people who, I mean, they barely manage to rattle off a God's good, let's eat a couple times a year, and they've never had so much as a splinter in their thumb. And I have encountered, if not all, then a strong most, every formula and explanation and apologetic. You know, they didn't believe enough. Maybe they were being taught a lesson. You got it. You know, there's God's timing, which, you know, that can be now, 10,000 years from now, and that's still within product specs. Okay. Maybe the whale thing got a green light because it was going to go online, and that's going to lead others to believe and pray. But the mother's prayer, yeah, maybe the audience wasn't big enough for that, or sometimes the answer's no, or silence and unwanted outcomes, you can just assume that's a no. So I can pretend to not have experienced first or secondhand what I've experienced, and I can pretend to not know philosophically what I think I know, and I can pretend not to have the data that I have. Or I can just be honest with you and tell you I'm still learning. I'm still open. But this is how I and how a lot of people are trying to think about it. Prayer has been a real struggle. Has been for me. I bet it has been for you. And I wish it was only a struggle on the level of underperforming crows. I'm so disappointed in the birds. And yet, there's a deep, poetic, unscientific part of me, and probably of you, that still prays. That insists, well, it's not nothing. It insists and it longs, the way you can imagine a walkie-talkie fundamentally understanding in its wiring, by its existence, by it existing at all. Well, there's another end. What would one walkie-talkie be? There's another end. This isn't nothing. And so in my deepest frustration, I come back to the same things over and over, and I wanted to offer a few of them here. And one of them is this. Jesus is recorded in the Gospels as asking to not be crucified. I know we don't talk about that a lot in Christianity, but he didn't want to be crucified. He was super stressed about it. One of the Gospel accounts said he was so stressed out about it, he started bleeding from his sweat glands, which is an actual physiological phenomenon for those under a great deal of anxiety. He didn't want to be, I mean, he was fully human too, remember? He didn't want it. And if ever a dude could pray, capital D, I'm being responsible, the Son of God surely could pray. Surely he was the prayer. And Matthew 26 presents the scene like this. Jesus said to them, the disciples, "My soul is deeply grieved, even to death." Like, I'm scared to death. "Remain here and stay awake with me." And then going a little farther, Jesus threw himself on the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible," and then he speaks figuratively to illustrate his not wanting to go through with this. Don't make me drink this to take it in. "Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." And I hope you don't think I'm being overly dramatic or theatrical when I insist that this is not how praying people who are scared to death, even the Messiah. This is not likely how they pray. I bet it was more like this. "Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me." And then this very real, expectant listening for options, for a voice, a way out, a way around, something that would give comfort, an explanation, something to make him not feel so alone, so abandoned in this moment. I mean, the Father spoke earlier in the Gospel of Matthew at the baptism in the beginning. Those were the days. Remember in the beginning when you were on fire in your faith, back when it seemed like prayer was a conversation and not unreturned voicemails? And then the Father spoke in chapter 17 too. That was a cool moment where the transfiguration and Peter got nervous and started running his mouth. And God spoke from heaven, basically said, Peter, shut up and listen. I mean, what a growth moment for him and for everybody. Huge. But now there's Jesus's agony, this pain, this terror, genuine longing for a single word, for comfort. I don't want to do this. Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yeah, not what I want, but what you want. And God the Father doesn't speak, not for the whole rest of the gospel, despite there's far worse coming. God the Father is not recorded as speaking in the rest of the book. Strange as it seems, I'm encouraged by that. When I am in my deepest ruts and prayer, even as a suggestion, irritates me as much as somebody saying, just, yeah, sprained ankle, just rub some lawn clippings on it. That'll heal it. It's just, what are you talking about? In those moments, what I remember to remember, I remember Jesus not kneeling, but throwing himself on the ground in the dirt in prayer. And then after a few minutes of not hearing anything, he collects himself, stands up, brushes off the dirt, wipes his nose with his sleeve and says, not what I want, but what you want. Because the implication is that what life and love want is worth getting to the other side of, to get all the way through the thing, especially if you don't have any options. All I can do is trust that love and life is going to make this worth it. When I don't hear answers, I remember Jesus didn't hear answers. So I try to do what I think Jesus does in this scene, and I step into the silent suck best I can, trying to remember that an absence and a muted presence sound exactly the same, but a muted presence is still a presence. What else can I do? Until God becomes more compliant, what choice do I have? And all this leads to the other things about prayer that I have learned and accepted, or I'm accepting, and I hope is somehow helpful, even if it doesn't necessarily get all your whales jumping, so to speak. Before I share this, though, let me just first permit you to, if you need permission from somebody, to put down prayer completely. Just put it down. You can pick it back up if you want to. Put it completely down. To whatever degree you are holding it as a thinly veiled genie in lamp situation, and that's why we're disappointed, or it's a Christmas list that you fill out all the time, hoping and maybe even declaring, I've been a good little boy, little girl, to get at least some of these toys on my list. If there's any inclination of that, let's just put it down. Let's just choose to put that down and let's see what's left. Because we don't have to say we gave up prayer, even if we gave up on the praying that we have been taught and tried to resuscitate and make work all these years. Because the Apostle Paul said, pray without ceasing. And so he must have meant something that sort of runs in the background as much as the foreground. Something other than events where you close your eyes and you ask for things and then you try to figure out why you're not hearing anything back. He must have meant something else, or that he ceased to pray when he wrote, never cease to pray. So maybe prayer can be more something more constant, less event-centered. And yeah, here I am saying, you've been thinking about it wrong. Think about it this way. I'm going to fix it for you. But I know. I'm not trying to fix it, and I'm not trying to add something. I'm hoping to lighten the load on this for us. Rather than telling you, put the burden on the other shoulder, dum-dum, I'm saying, what if we take the burden off of us completely? That prayer can be reasonably and biblically and traditionally defined as an awareness, an ongoing noticing, an ongoing sensitivity to the Spirit and to life happening right now, and then living in that awareness, you and I together. That's prayer. And so you'll know you're growing in this awareness because you'll grow in gratitude. You'll grow in awe. If the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough. That's a famous quote from Meister Eckhart. Thank you is enough. Jesus is recorded as giving thanks regarding his food. It wasn't scripted. He just gave thanks. We ask God to bless food now. God, will you bless this? You know, please, you've got to consecrate this baconator before it goes into this temple. You can keep doing that if you want to, but it's a strange thing to ask God to bless our food. Just give thanks for it. Give thanks before you eat it. Give thanks again when you're done. Give thanks considering how your food, how it got from there to here. Not as though, well, I got to feel guilty for a second. because I got to think about how little of a role I played in securing this food and how good I have it compared to others. That's not gratitude. That's guilt. Genuine gratitude, which is sort of the side effect of awareness. And it sort of comes connected to awe, to wow. And this is plenty of prayer. I am thankful because I'm pausing to be here and awake to this. And it's amazing. I get to participate in this. And by the way, this isn't a message about food, but I'll tell you right now, if you want to change and improve your relationship with food in this culture, as well as grow more attuned in your faith, just pause in gratitude and awareness over everything you eat. No guilt, no shame. Just pause. Think of the countless steps, the people, the circumstances that made this happen. And just pause and notice it. Give thanks for it. That could be all the praying you ever did, and you would feel so connected. So I'm touching on awe and wow a little bit here. We're going to talk about that more in a few weeks. For now, I want to think about, in light of this awareness thing, I want to think about, as a people of love who keep their antenna of awareness up, that ceaseless prayer of attention, sensitivity, how does this relate to how we encounter others? Prayer was part of Jesus's life and part of the lives of those around him. That praying was ritualized. Absolutely ritualized. There were numerous prayers that Jewish men and women prayed every day as a matter of habit, a discipline. It kept people connected to their tradition. There's so much we could say about this, and almost all of it would be good. Rituals that keep us tethered to each other, to our history. I often think we don't have enough of those. At least I don't feel like I do. And yet, for many of us, tradition hasn't been enough reason to keep doing something that we otherwise we're just not seeing the value in it like we used to. But Jesus didn't just pray the scripted prayers. He prayed his gratitude. He prayed his desires and his longings. And here's what I take from that and I hope to give to you or remind you about. He prayed always in the context of his actively seeking to give those prayers space to happen in his own life. Every time Jesus is praying, he is actively, tangibly involved in the prayer succeeding. And I know you're not Jesus, I'm not Jesus, but there's a lesson in that. I think it's accurate to say that he expects the same of those who follow his way to some degree. Once the disciples saw a bunch of hungry people and they said to Jesus, "Those people are hungry. Jesus, send them away to eat," which is they're requesting something of Jesus. It's almost like a prayer right to his face. You know what Jesus said? "You give them something to eat. You figure it out. God, those dear people are so hungry." Yes, correct. What are you going to do about it? Miroslav Volf pointed out that there's something deeply hypocritical about praying for a problem you're unwilling to resolve. You know, maybe you can't resolve it, but it's at least hypocritical for me to pray about something and refusing to be involved. Or as my friend Rich used to say, you can't lean on a shovel and pray for a hole. So that doesn't mean you don't pray unless you're able to solve what you're praying about. Hear that. But I mean, most of reality we're powerless over. I think this wisdom does remind us, though, that praying about things we're not willing to be involved in, that's gossip, right? "God, I heard that guy is lonely. Dear Jesus, those kids can't afford school lunch." So maybe prayer can be understood as opening ourselves to gratitude for what already is. Awareness to ourselves and where we are and the wisdom and conviction to do whatever it is in our power to do about what we are aware of. I mean, when's the last time you considered the Serenity Prayer? It's brilliant. I think it gets snubbed for being so popular. People have it on their fridge. Once it goes up there, it can't be good anymore, right? But encounter it again. Be aware and present to its wisdom. "God, grant me the serenity, the peace to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." It's brilliant. Because it's about increased sensitivity to what is, accepting what is, changing what is, if love and justice and kindness require that of me, because it is, according to love, unacceptable. I can't accept it. And then the ability to discern the difference between what I have to accept and let go of, or what I should accept and yet involve ourselves in terms of bringing love's light. And sometimes this is a prayer you pray before a meeting or a hard conversation, and then it's just, you know, you get from A to Z in 1 hour, one day. This is also a long game prayer. We keep praying it over the years, decades, because we understand that the deepest stuff about what's being changed in us and what we're a part of, it's, you know, it's not an Amazon Prime order. We're praying for something inside us to change how we encounter real life, something profoundly more sensitive and aware than praying for a problem we're unwilling to resolve, or not praying at all, or running headfirst to the things without awareness because the, you know, we only got as far as, well, that should be different. There's a series on Netflix called Earthstorm. It's only a few episodes, and the first one is about tornadoes and storm chasers in the U.S. Super wild ride, I recommend. And I reached out to the producers because I wanted to get permission to play part of it for you so you could see it, but they never got back to me. So I'm left to assume that the production company is run by crows. But I was moved by it enough to decide that I might try to explain it to you, and then you can go watch it later. So about half an hour into the show, they cover this tornado that hit Mayfield, Kentucky, an F4 tornado. It happened just a few years ago. Unbelievable damage. So many people suffered, loss of property, injuries, several dozen people died. And in the middle of it all, there was this candle factory that was completely demolished, and there were employees inside, and some of them were killed. But there's this woman among the survivors, and her name is Kiana Parsons Perez, and the structure has fallen on them. So with the structure having collapsed on her, she's panicked. And so were those stuck in there with her. Their legs and arms are pinned and twisted. It's just terrifying. She gets on Facebook Live and she said, "I don't know who's watching, but here is what happened. And here is what I and others are experiencing right now. And here's what we're feeling." And then you hear her ask for help over and over. She asks, she's praying. But then she also starts calming the others who are crying out in the dark around her. She invites them to sing happy birthday to her, since her birthday was the next day. She's distracting their panicked minds. And then those who were watching Facebook Live, powerless to do anything else, they're typing their encouragements to Kiana, their prayers to God for Kiana, and then the workers. And then while all that's happening, rescue crews, who you can assume ask God for courage and strength, they are feverishly cutting through the debris and shouting into the rubble that they're coming, hold on. They're doing what they're able to do. Kiana is praying for what she cannot do for herself, while doing for others what she can do, giving them hope, encouraging them. While powerless observers try to close the distance between them and Kiana and the others by praying and offering hope, and then workers are praying with their hands. They're praying with their tools, alleviating suffering, trying to make things right best they could in the wake of an unimaginable tragedy and chaos. And this, my dear friends, is the entirety of the human experience in one little microcosm. And it's perhaps all we need to know about what real prayer is. We ask for help. We become help. We say prayers with words when there's nothing else to do, but we do prayers with our hands and our influence and our resources and our enactment of love and right-making. The rest is details and dogma that you and I haven't been able to continue valuing on this path of Christ's love. And so I wanted to admit, without being clever, I really did have this thought months back and have been sitting with it. Maybe it was the crows who prayed. And since I'm the one with the dog food and the leftover corn, and I'm the one, I don't need prizes. It just would have made me feel a certain way, but I can find all somewhere else. Maybe I needed to be reminded how often I'm the answer. I'm not God, but I'm the answer. I'm the answerer of prayers. Maybe Christ, who isn't merely a king, but is our teacher, isn't teaching us how to pray so much as teaching us how to answer more of them. Not that I don't have needs, you have needs, but maybe the reason the Lord's Prayer starts with Our Father is because we have to be reminded often that I'm not the only sibling in this house and in this family, and we've got to work together and depend on each other and remind each other we're not alone. And so as we close, I want to invite you to pray, to say thank you about as many things in a day as you can recognize that are gifts. I invite you to stop multiple times a day to turn up your awareness, how it feels to be right where you are, and all the past and future stuff trying to distract you, that you would just wake up to that and be sensitive to all you're going to miss if you stay on autopilot. And I invite you out of shame and guilt and burden and into the flow of Christ. He's always putting skin in the game, not just words. And again, we don't have to feel guilt and shame about any of that. This is the gift. Our prayer life is our life, a life spent simply learning how to love and be loved in one another's presence. In the spirit of increased awareness and encouragement, if you would like to write down with as little or as much detail as you're comfortable with, what you've been asking God for or stopped asking God for, what you wish you could hear God's wisdom or encouragement for, what are you praying about right now? What have you been praying about? If you want, email that. Email your prayers to care@crosspoint.org. And I'm sorry, that's not a more direct, non-public email for God I just revealed. It's a handful of people at Crosspoint who you can know will join you in your prayer for acceptance and courage and wisdom. And in the very least, you can know you're unburdening yourself from the sense that what you're carrying, you carry alone. Some others will carry it with you. May we pray and live our prayers for ourselves and others in love's name. Amen.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.